Binding of Isaac has evolved a lot since its very first version appeared on Steam in 2011. Now, the game has an almost confusing amount of expansions and remakes, and remains an incredibly popular roguelike experience, inspired by The Legend of Zelda's famous dungeons. With no single session on Binding of Isaac being exactly the same as another, its simple concept cleverly branches out into nearly infinite variations. It's because of this replayability that its many releases stand the test of time, and its confrontational religious themes keep people debating its meanings to this day. When it initially came out, it was a small but effective flash-based game with music by Danny Baranowski. After composing the excellent soundtrack for Super Meat Boy, Danny had made it clear that he was a new force to be reckoned with in the video game community. He continued that into Binding of Isaac, where his contributions made a Freudian nightmare all the more deliciously creepy and unsettling. Binding of Isaac Rebirth in 2014 led to Danny's soundtrack being entirely replaced by new music from Ridiculon. In spite of this, players have far from forgotten Danny's original work. It holds a special place in the hearts of fans, who felt his music captured the total nastiness of Isaac's setting. Ridiculon's interpretation was equally wonderful and refreshingly different, and you can hear in-depth about their approach in the next episode of this podcast. I'm Lee Tyrrell, and this is The Sound Test, where I look in-depth into video game audio and music, along with the very people who crafted it. In this episode, I'm joined by Danny Baranowski to comb over his compositions for The Binding of Isaac, along with its guest guitarist, Jules Conroy, best known as Family Jewels 7X. Remembering just how strange the concept and narrative of Isaac truly is, what was Danny's mindset before he got started?
Okay, we're doing this game, Binding of Isaac. You're this scared baby shooting tears and all weird shit. Okay, so we're doing an absurdist kind of baby, weird, gross thing. Okay, gotcha. The thing that stood out the most to me was like, it needs to be childlike. It's going to be fucked up. It's going to be scary. It's going to be gross. But it's childlike. You're a child who's going through a traumatic thing, right? So the first thing, I feel like this stuff is obvious, but maybe just because I've been doing this for so long, but like the very first thing that came to mind was like, well, lullabies, you know, Brahms, that kind of stuff, like music box lullabies. You know, lullabies are creepy. How many movies you watch and there's just like a little girl singing to like a music box and that's creepy. So it's like, that's an easy one, right? That's an easy choice. And so the very first track, Sacrificial, like it's definitely 100%, you know, this is a schizophrenic lullaby.
Sacrificial, which plays during your first excursions in the game, has a feeling of constant movement. This is because, for the most part, Danny runs through a complex chord structure that rarely resolves. By that, I mean it only briefly lands on the root chord that defines its key signature. The resulting feeling is one of quiet urgency, subtly highlighting Isaac's turmoil.
I need chord progressions to just dig into a weird chord and then find their way back. Like, to me, that's the whole most interesting part about making music is just like, okay, I got a cool 1-4-5 progression, okay, 1-5-1-5-1-5, and okay, let me just, you know, I'll use like chord assistance sometimes, but then I'll just go off the rails and be like, all right, well, this sounds good. Okay, it has to loop now. Get it back to it. Again, I'm not a super scholastic person in this. I did my basic music theory and stuff, but like, I have to do a lot of modulation to get back to the starting chord. And I don't think I do that in a very traditional way. Not bragging or nothing. I don't know how to do it in a traditional way. And so I'm sure there's just like weird major chords and nine chords and stuff that I don't even understand that I just have to use to get back there. There was an attempt on my part to not ever come to rest, because it's like you're this terrified child in a thing with monsters and stuff. You cannot rest or you will die, right? So it's interesting how much of this stuff just happens subconsciously, and then you could justify it afterwards.
Both subconsciously and consciously, Danny took influence from several classical composers for The Binding of Isaac. This bleeds into his orchestral arrangements for other games too. So when did Danny first start paying attention to the rich sounds of classical music?
I first like felt love for music when I studied Bach in school, and I wasn't the best student. I can't name a lot of this stuff, but when we did the analyzation, the four-part harmony, analyzing that kind of stuff, just seeing the kind of intricacy in that every single line, the thing that stuck with me forever was like every single line that soprano, alto, tenor, bass can stand on its own. And there was just such a, God, I don't even know, just a majesty to it. I don't even have the right word for it, right? It's just that stuck with me, right? And so I already have this like just very strange appreciation for classical music, even though I don't listen to it a lot. I just love the way it's constructed.
No matter how much these inspirations were in the forefront of his mind, they can be heard in many ways. Sacrificial's complex chord structure is gorgeous and impressive, but undeniably bleak. As you get deeper into the game, a new track called Repentance takes over. Though definitely dark, I can't help but hear an emergent hope from the piece's piano refrain. Hope is an essential part of childhood innocence, and it makes sense that it would show up in Binding of Isaac, considering its themes. Because this is something I personally hear in tracks like Repentant, I asked Danny whether any optimism was a deliberate part of his composition.
You know, there might be some weird subconscious stuff going on where it's like, yeah, there should be some hope in there, but definitely if that's coming through in Isaac, that was definitely not intentional in a direct way. But like, I try to avoid unipolar darkness, right? Because I don't think that's interesting. In the same way, I don't think unipolar happiness is interesting. Extremely just happy, you know, and that's why like 90% of the music that's just the same rock progression on the radio, like I appreciate it. I appreciate the production. I appreciate people putting their own spin on it. I don't hate it. Maybe I say I do, but I'm being hyperbolic, but like there's no texture for me. I could sit down on the next game like this and be like, okay, how do I infuse just a bit of hope in there, right? And think about it for days and days and then just, you know, be stuck on it. Or I could just let the subconscious do some of that kind of stuff, right?
One place where there's no hope to be heard is in Binding of Isaac's multitude of bosses, each more gruesome than the last. From personifications of deadly sins, through Isaac's mother to Isaac himself, the bosses are a huge part of the game's character. Danny wrote themes for almost all of them, after following a similar process for Super Meat Boy. It's fair to assume, then, that Danny knows a thing or two about boss music, which is practically a genre of its own. What were some of the techniques he used to give each fight in Isaac its own intensity? And how does he look back on them?
I still don't really know how I feel about the boss tracks in Isaac, because I tried to stay on that whole like orchestral classical inspiration thing. And I still think in retrospect was like, are they too incongruent? right? Like, because it's kind of a similar thing to the Meat Boy thing where it's like, it starts electronic, then it gets to orchestral. And in Isaac, it's more like it's the boss tracks start orchestral and then just get weirder and weirder. I'm a drummer. All right, so I've been a drummer since I was 10 years old. I'm very bad at guitar, very bad at piano. Like, I know all the notes, I know how they work, all this stuff, but I'm a drummer. And so for me, intensity is rhythm-based, general, right? Like, you can get it through other means, harmonic means, all that kind of stuff, but definitely all my boss tracks are very rhythmic and stuff. And so when it comes to the harmonic stuff, I do feel like you have to leave some room for it not to be hitting you in the face the whole time, right? Like, even if it's a super crazy fast metal based like boss track, like, you have to leave some room. You just landed a bunch of hits, they landed hits on you. Okay, all right, now there's that rhythm to battle of just like fight defend, rest, hide, fight, that kind of stuff. I mean, just doing everything I can to try to replicate that kind of loop of fight or flight, I guess.
The very last boss track in Binding of Isaac, My Innermost Apocalypse, was written for the game's Wrath of the Lamb expansion. Before we look at that piece in depth, with some thoughts from its guest guitarist Jules Conroy, what opportunities did this new expansion open up for Danny?
I redid all the tracks. I did like alternate versions of all the tracks where I made certain to use all the exact same instruments, which is something I hadn't done before. And so, like, for each track, for the alternate track, I just wiped the sequencer and start over. So use all the same instruments, you know, bring in new ones if I absolutely need to, but it's just like, okay, wipe it clean. What have I learned in the last year? Let's see what it would be like if I did them again today. And those are definitely my favorite tracks, like the ones, you know, like the alternate basement and caves and all those kind of things, because it's just, it almost felt like cheating.
The Wrath of the Lamb released in the year following Binding of Isaac, 2012, and gave Danny the chance to compose a whole new set of tunes. Hindsight can be a great thing too, as the time between Isaac's debut version and its expansion meant that Danny could engage with fans and soak in feedback. Add-ons like Wrath of the Lamb separate video games from other mediums and can make the creative process much more organic for the artists and musicians involved.
One of the weirdest things about doing this is that, like, so first of all, you're going to work on a game that people are going to see and play. It's like when you're working on a movie, like, a few people are going to see cuts of the movie or something, but it's not going to be like releases. Like when you're making games, especially now with early access and stuff, like, you're making a thing that is growing and gestating. And so, you know, 2011, 7 years ago, there was, you know, not as many followers and stuff on Twitter, so there wasn't as much direct feedback immediately. But yeah, when you put it out, and then it's just like, you watch people play this game for a year, and then it's like, okay, make more. With everything you've heard from people about what they like, what they don't like, what works and doesn't work, okay, do more. And that doesn't happen in other forms of media, right? Like, I guess you could have albums where people, you know, do new versions of songs and stuff, but it's just like, it doesn't happen on a consistent basis in the way it does with games. And it's this, again, this is one of my favorite things about it, that you're making music for a living thing.
Through social media and platforms like Twitch, people behind the scenes of video games can get a direct yet detached form of feedback that strongly informs their growth. For Danny, this feedback was essential to Wrath of the Lamb's extra music. But how did it help him to hone Binding of Isaac's atmosphere?
I just had a year to hear the music, to play the game a ton, to watch people play the game a ton, and then, you know how, like, when you write music and, like, the most critical you'll ever be of your own music is when you just, like, sit someone down to listen to it? You kind of, like, look over at them just, like, and, like, nod your head. Like, are you it's cool, right? It's cool, right? And they just, when their expression is blank, it's, like, the worst thing in the world. It's like, what did I? So that with this kind of weird distance, right, of like watching people on Twitch or on YouTube play it, and you have this distance where you don't see them, you don't interact with them, but you get to just vicariously get through this other people listening to my music embarrassment. Like, it really kind of clarifies that in a very interesting way, and it was very useful and interesting, and it's, I think it made me a better composer to kind of go back and just make these new tracks and be like, okay, well, I know what people liked and what they didn't, and I mean, as much as I can glean from what they say, and not, you know, you're never gonna know their actual feelings, but and then also just another year of just getting better at writing music.
If it wasn't for Danny's interest in the community that surrounds his music, he never would have met Jules Conroy, or Family Jules 7X as he's best known. Jules and Danny first collaborated on My Innermost Apocalypse for Binding of Isaac's expansion, but they most recently worked together on Crypt of the Necrodancer, which has its own dedicated episode to come in this series.
I found him on YouTube doing Meat Boy stuff, then he did a Isaac medley in metal and stuff, and I hired him to do guitar on the new Final Boss track. And I thought it was so cool that just like, I didn't know this person when I made the first one. Now I know him. He's a great friend of mine now. He worked on Necrodancer, did a whole soundtrack. But it's like, how cool is that? That like, a social thing that happens in the real world comes to impact this soundtrack.
Before meeting Danny, Jules was beloved by fans of VGM for his pitch-perfect guitar covers and remixes. It's a reputation he keeps to this day, but games like Crypt of the Necrodancer have shown just how valuable his tight playing can be to an original soundtrack. I was fortunate enough to get in touch with Jules for this episode, so I naturally asked him what he remembers of his fated first contact with Danny.
So I covered a Super Meat Boy song because my girlfriend at the time was watching me play Super Meat Boy, and she was like, "Oh, you should do this song," and I was like, "Nah, you know, I don't want to do this song." See, like, I loved it and I kept singing it, and like, I don't know what my thought process was. Maybe it was that I didn't think I could do the song justice, or that I didn't think it would sound good on guitar. And the song was "World." It was the hospital theme from Super Meat Boy. I, you know, spoiler alert, ended up covering it, I think probably a year after I broke up with this girl, and I think I just dove into it, and that was kind of like a mentality that I did in my second quote-unquote year of doing weekly videos on YouTube, where even if I wasn't particularly comfortable playing a song, I was going to try it anyway and see what happens, and I don't think I got a whole lot of the notes correct, but I guess I did a good enough job, because Danny, like, reached out to me very quickly after I released that cover, and he you know, was saying, "Hey, I loved what you did with the song. Like, that's really, really cool. Are you thinking about doing any other of the Super Meat Boy stuff?" And I was like, "Yeah, you know, I was thinking about doing a medley and stuff." So I ended up doing a Super Meat Boy medley, and we kind of stayed in touch on and off. You know, I you know, mostly it was just like, "Hey, I'm doing this song that you did," you know, and he was like, "You'd be like, cool, that's awesome." And that was pretty much the start of it, up until he actually asked me to do guitars on the final boss for the Wrath of the Lamb boss for Binding of Isaac.
As it should be, My Innermost Apocalypse is one of gaming's very best boss themes. It has everything. Power guitars, pounding brass, fast-paced synth lines, and even an evil, lurking organ. It also boasts the highest intensity of any Binding of Isaac bosses, which Jules brought out with well-sprinkled guitar chucks. But, funnily enough, it's a collaboration that came dangerously close to never happening.
If I remember this correctly, I had a date that night with a girl, and Danny sent me a message. He's just like, "Hey, I really want you to do the guitars on this track for Binding of Isaac." He sent me an email, about like 15 minutes of me being out the door, and he's like, I want you to guitarist for this. And I was like, oh cool, yeah, I can probably get to that. When is it due by? He's like, tomorrow. I was like, oh my god. He's just like, honestly, I would prefer if you can get it done like tonight. Needless to say, I stood up my date. I felt like an asshole, but I did the guitars for that track, and they're in the game. And that's pretty much. I think that was the final act of loyalty. And then, you know, I was in a blood pact with Danny B ever since.
Blood pact with Danny may be musically rewarding, but it does mean that you might have to adjust to his unique, brilliant way of doing things sometimes. Jules went to some lengths to accommodate a single note for My Innermost Apocalypse, but that level of effort is typical for him, as you'll hear a little more about in Crypt of the Necrodancer's upcoming episode.
A normal guitar tuning goes from, you have three octaves, starting on E as the lowest open note on the guitar. And Danny wrote that song in the key of A, where the A below the note that is the lowest note on the guitar, but also it goes down to a G below that A at one point. At some point, I was really lucky. I bought eight string guitar strings. For some reason, I can't remember. Maybe I actually just found them, or maybe somebody gave them to me because they thought I had an eight string. But I only had a six string at the time. And a seven or eight string guitar goes lower. It goes into those lower notes and stuff. What I ended up doing to be able to play that was I strung up a Gibson Explorer, I think it was, which is a six-string guitar, but with these just telephone wire, like, thick guitar strings on that lowest thing to get that low note so that it didn't just sound like noodles, you know, it sounded like an actual note. That was foreshadowing, because later on I would have to do a lot of things that are questionably possible on guitar, because Danny typically just, you know, he gets the music in his head and he writes it out, you know, he plugs it into the computer without any you know, he doesn't think about the guitar part, you know, he just thinks about what's going to sound good, which he should think about that, but he should prioritize the song sounding good over whether or not it's going to be possible on guitar.
My Innermost Apocalypse doesn't sound good, it sounds fantastic. A perfect ending to The Binding of Isaac as a game, as well as a musical journey. It has a permanent place in the Boss Theme Hall of Fame. But Isaac is packed with music, and not all of it was written for bosses, or to loop in the background of a level. There's a remarkable amount of interstitial music, short tracks and flourishes that are heard only after specific achievements or events. For Danny, how does the writing of these pieces differ to longer, fuller tunes?
It's harder than regular music, I think, because with a normal track, you can just kind of dig in. You can throw something down, loop it a bunch, add some drums, come back to it, you know, write a second section, and then like, okay, that first section, you know, doesn't feel right. Okay, fix it, right? The smaller stuff, it's like, all right, you got 6 seconds. Make it cool. The small interstitial stuff definitely falls more into the purview of like sound design-y kind of stuff as much as like game music can. And that's definitely where I consider myself weaker, is like sound design, because I'm much better at letting a cool chord progression and a melody carry me and guide me than like here's something that sounds cool, right? Like synth design is still, I still struggle with it. Like I'm okay with it, and I'm okay with what I come up with, but like, it's definitely a struggle.
Video games lean heavily on short cues to signpost the player towards certain emotions or game mechanics. Things like that can be heard in games since audio was first incorporated into them. It's a legacy that Dan is aware of, and kept strongly in mind for The Binding of Isaac.
There's a lot of inspiration to be had, like a lot of it mostly was from Zelda, because this game was very inspired by Zelda. You know, the everyone knows the dee-da-da-doo-da-dee. That's perfect. Like, it may not be perfect objectively, but subjectively, we all know that means, hey, you just found something. We just know that. And, like, same with, like, you know, the Metroid, the when you get an item, that kind of thing. I mean, I hate to say it, but just trying to take inspiration or copy that the best you can without plagiarizing, right? Like, what we all do, take inspiration from stuff and spit out new stuff.
Whether it's through Danny's exhilarating boss themes, contemplative level tracks, or even the brief interstitial breaks, The Binding of Isaac shows just how well a soundtrack can encapsulate themes and narrative. You can hear the titular character's fear and anguish, and even some of his hope, because of Danny's music. When the game reaches its conclusion, and Isaac meets his innermost apocalypse, Danny's bombastic arrangements and the guitar from Jules underline just how far the player's come. But restrained, dank breaks remind us of the underlying atmosphere of classically tinged introspection. Danny's score enhances every inch of The Binding of Isaac, and it's something that fans keep returning to, regardless of any remakes since.
You know, you hear about how much music is of the experience, like a film. Is it like film and movies? Is it half of a film? Is it half of a game? Is it a third? Is it this and that? And I just don't really think that's a valid question. Whether it's 1% or 99%, like, what's important is that it's as big of a role as the game needs it to be. And there, I think it does help to shape your rate of cognition. And then the tone of the music itself helps shape your perception of the art.
Thanks to both Danny and Jules for speaking to me for the sound test, but thank you too for taking the time to listen. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please make sure to subscribe or follow on whatever platform you might be listening on. There will be a new episode each week, with next week's looking even further into The Binding of Isaac with Ridiculon, who took over music from its remake, Rebirth, and onwards. All our Patreon supporters can receive early access to this second part for a single dollar, so head on over to patreon.com/_secretcave if you'd like to pledge your support and hear next week's episode right now. Of course, this doesn't apply if you're already a patron and hearing this episode in advance.